Hello, everybody, and thank you for tuning in to the Liberty Report. With us today is Daniel McAdams, our co-host. Daniel, good to see you.
Happy Monday, Dr. Paul. How are you?
Doing fine, thank you.
I saw you over the weekend out walking, by the way.
Uh-oh. I've been walking a little slower, but more often.
It's warm
but,
out there.
But, you know, I felt, matter of fact, after I got back out again, you know, I think you noticed we've had a little bit of rain.
yeah.
So in between the rain showers, I got out and I convinced myself, I psyched myself up. If you walk, you feel better.
Yeah, it's true.
Okay, let's feel better after we talk about, I don't know, can we feel better after we talk about what's happening in the world?
Not this first story.
We frequently, and you're pretty good at it, find the things, well, we have something we can say that's positive. And if we run out of things to say, things positive, we say, well, we have friends that are very positive. Come meet them, you know, at our convention.
That's right. So,
anyway, I guess we're going to start off with something that is not exactly positive. It's scary, but it's positive if people are knowing about it and do something about it. It's sort of like if you don't know anything about vaccines and you just say, well, the government told me to do it, and you do it, that's not bad or good. You're just obeying.
Yeah.
But if you know there's a problem and know more of the truth of things, you might have a concern. So this is a concern. There was a day when I thought the FBI was, you know, pretty good. I had not read too much about John Edgar Hoover.
Yeah.
And we find out the FBI are not saintly.
No.
But the FBI is a reflection of an attitude by the people wanting law and order. It's an attitude that is prevailing in Washington and the people who created it. It's been around since World War II and bits and pieces even before that. And now the FBI is involved now because we're being threatened. Internal terrorism is coming.
Yes.
And, you know, it's a very, very serious problem. Just think of how many dangerous people that were in this January 6th demonstration in Washington. Boy, we have to do something about that. Yeah, because they're sort of sneaky. They were just demonstrating, and they wouldn't even take a gun with them.
They didn't want
to be caught with a gun. So we have to really punish them. So they're arrested and they're punished. So, but they're still looking around. The government's still looking around, and they don't have all the information they want, whether it has to do with January 6th or whatever, because right now it's broad. You know, there's been an insurrection. It's going to come back. That's why we have to have FBI offices and people watching, members of Congress and everybody else all around the country, and they want. This must be fake news. They said they're asking the family to report on their families if they do think some suspicious. What if somebody was drinking and was a little bit rude to another member of family? I'll get you.
Yeah.
You know, a little bit of that might go on. But anyway, in these articles, I thought it was interesting to find that the people who wrote the article said they want the people and the family members to rat on a fellow member.
Yeah.
And, you know, that term is interesting because it almost, at times, you know, you even in the worst circles, like if you're the most vicious criminal in the world and you're in prison, you never rat on another person. And here they're saying, well, we want you to tell us if you're suspicious. Well, you can't wait until he does something or you're responsible.
Yeah.
So that's bad trend. And people should be alerted to it, and they ought to make sure they're a member of the Congress that they don't support having any congressional support from a program like this.
It's pretty amazing. It's almost a parody. You almost have to scratch your head. You almost have to pinch yourself to see if it's true. But it is, and let's look up this first clip. This is a tweet that the FBI put out over the weekend, July 11th, just yesterday. Family members and peers are often best positioned to witness signs of mobilization to violence. Help prevent homegrown violent extremism. Visit da-da-da-da-da to learn how to spot suspicious behaviors and report them to the FBI. This is really out of East Germany. This is out of the Stasi, where they found out when they opened the files, so many family members reporting on others. And what it does is it causes a breakdown in society because you can't trust anyone. You can't trust your kids. You can't trust Uncle Joe. You can't trust anyone. And that's what it's designed to do, to pit people against other people, to break down the normal bonds we have in community, and to turn everyone suspicious. And when everyone is suspicious of everyone else, the only one you can turn to is the government, and that's what it's all about.
You know, it's already has started this red flag thing. If you have a member of this, you know, in the attack on ownership of guns,
you
can just report him. He has a gun and he looks dangerous, and then he's guilty until he's proven innocent. He may get his gun back. Generally speaking, they don't get their liberty back, and it just is an encroachment on other people's liberty. And this certainly is bad news if it's allowed to go ahead. But unfortunately, so much of it is not done by the people even paying, well, getting the knowledge.
Yeah.
And the members of Congress generally don't know, or they're complacent about it. Or if they are, what they get frightened about and intimidated by is it looks like they're weak on criminals and they don't want to stop somebody from reporting a dangerous person. But this is a dangerous move, and I'm afraid that as of the moment, I don't see any way it's going to get stopped real soon. But I do know that that won't be stopped unless the American people wake up and say enough is enough, which they have started to do with lockdowns and a few other things. So, but when the reporting by major media and social media is all one-sided, you know, it's a pretty tough job to try to change attitudes.
The problem is, you know, Republicans and conservatives in Congress and elsewhere like this, they still have a hard time understanding that these people are not our friends. They still want to wave that flag and feel like they're law and order and everything, not realizing what's happening here is undermining every basis of what America stands for. But what this is in a broader context, it's the turning of the war on terrorism inside, internally, and that's what it's all about. We go overseas, you bomb countries, you take care of terrorists, but it's turning it inward. It's a war on American citizens, and we see that in places like the Tucker Carlson NSA issue that we talked about on Thursday, where it looks pretty obvious that the NSA was not only spying on Tucker Carlson, but they released data in a way to make him look bad because he's challenging them. And in fact, just before the show started, our friend Norman Singleton sent me a letter from someone we know, Senator Rand Paul, demanding a full investigation of the NSA and this unmasking of Tucker Carlson. But that's how it starts. That's how it starts, and it continues, and it will continue until something happens, until someone gets a spine in Washington and says something about it.
You know, it's really part of this is the thought police. You know, they don't have proof of anything, but I think this, and he said this. And there was one article that said that they are trying to combine the two of the anti-white stuff, the white supremacist movement. So the you know, if you're suspicious of somebody that is part of that group, turn the name in because they need the name. They need to be watching people. You know, in some ways, it's the atmosphere that changes. It's not the same program, but it's this idea the government will be knocking on everybody's door. Did you take your vaccine?
Yeah, yeah.
And if you're not, you're going to be put on a list where you can't get a job.
Yeah.
And they actually say that these days.
Yeah,
I've heard it on television where people will say, well, you know, the government doesn't have the right to tell you have to have it. But just remember, you know, the corporations will do what we tell them, and they will not get a job if they don't do exactly as the government tells them.
And another aspect of this turning the war, this political war on Americans, is the sort of 1A that we're going to talk about, which is the $6 million that have now been appropriated for a private company, Deloitte Financial Advisory, to create a database. $6 million to create a database with all the information about these January 6th insurrectionists, as you point out earlier, none of which even had a gun, not even a pea shooter. Great insurrection that was. And here's the thing, it's not just to identify people who may have broken the law when they went in and they broke Nancy Pelosi's computer or whatever they did. It's not about that, because according to the report, this could expand to a $25.9 million grant and a potential end date of May 31st, 2027. This is a long-haul database to be created for political enemies, for persecution and prosecution, Take this together with the FBI turning your family members, and it's painting a very chilling picture of the direction that these people want America to head.
You know, involved in all this wokeism that goes on, it's been recognized and talked about. It's anti-white, and they talk about that, but it's also anti-Christian.
Yeah.
And of course, you can't say that because people will think you're a bigot or whatever. But the right now, though, I think this can be worked into these groups that are reporting them because sometimes religious debates are very, very amorphous, you know, different yeah. opinions. Sometimes there's a religious group that's pro-war and sometimes they're pro-peace,
yeah.
you know, and yet they pretend they belong to the same group. But the movement right now is actually, and you read articles about this, is that wokeism is like a religion,
yeah.
you know, dedication. And if you don't do it, it's almost a spiritual event for some people. If you don't obey the rules of wokeism, you'll be canceled. You will be excommunicated.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what they do. So it's religion, but they, when they expand the definition of religion, and I've seen this a couple times where, you know, this devotion to wokeism is like a religious belief.
Yeah, it is. And the question is, where are these powerful white supremacist leaders? You know, I've asked it before. Where are their rallies? Let's look at some of their rallies. Where are they? Let's name these. Who are these dangerous white supremacist leaders? And yeah, there is a problem. There's always a problem with bigotry. We're fallen creatures. But the idea that there is some huge movement of white supremacists who are going around planning, well, we do know from what happened over the summer that BLM and Antifa are not afraid of using violence to put forward their political goals. But, you know, except for a few isolated incidents, we haven't seen any of this. So it's a problem looking for a solution, but what it really is a political war on political enemies.
Right, and it's hard to pin them down, but I think as time goes on, more and more people will become aware of it and be alarmed. But as usual, so often, it comes late. So much damage can be done, especially when the authoritarians you know, are fighting to get power, and they can demagogue, and they actually believe that lying is good under those conditions. And usually conditions are bad, and that is why, you know, this whole goal of disruption in the communities and in the inner cities, some people say, well, it looks like some groups are doing it to their own people, and there's all this chaos. Well, it doesn't matter as long as there's chaos, because then people are more likely to respond to that individual that comes along and said, well, we'll take care of you, and this is what you have to do. And instead of saying, well, maybe it's too much government that is the problem, instead they come along and people get frightened, and the fear is built up, and the people who do it have a lot of tools to do it. They put fear into the people, and they do it out of fear. And we've talked about this before, about the fear which becomes a legitimate fear
yeah.
when somebody tries to stay out of the mess, and yet they want to at least, you know, talk like a normal person. And if they then get accused of something wrong, they say, well, if you don't do what we tell you, if you don't have your mask on right, or you don't have your vaccine, you're not going to have a job.
Yeah.
And that's blackmail. It's a little bit more than just casual irrational fear. There's some of that, but there's a mixture of that. To be concerned and worried about it and not know what to do is probably a pretty normal reaction when the authoritarians are really bearing down on people, and all of a sudden you hear totally innocent, decent people, you know, losing their jobs. And it's occurring.
Yes, it is occurring, and it's chilling. But you know what else we want to talk about? A little bit about foreign policy, because we noticed an article by Jason Ditz on antiwar.com. We've talked about this. We're going to continue covering because it's important. But this withdrawal from Afghanistan, and we're happy about it. We praised President Biden because we know that he had to withstand all the slings and arrows of the warmongers that are well populated in both political parties. They're all against this, and it looks like he's holding steady in a way. But Dr. Paul, as you pointed out when you sent this over, there may be a little bit more than meets the eye here on this.
Right. You know, there was a one article I'm going to quote from it. It says the U.S. has been arguing for weeks now that they will retain military capacity in Afghanistan and has been assuring the Afghan government that they will be supporting them. With the irony, who's the Afghan government?
Yeah.
Well, who's in charge right now? Yeah, you know, the Taliban seems to have a fair amount of control. That's not it. What they're trying to say is we will never let the Taliban take over. So in many ways, you know, what Biden has done, it contradicts their ultimate goals. But the contradictions, just doesn't bother them too much. 20 years and say, well, we can't do well. And even the people who are really fighting it, like the hawks in Congress,
yeah,
they're saying, oh, we can't leave. We can't leave. That means all our men have died and women who died in vain. So this send more over. 20 years isn't enough. How many more can we kill?
Yeah.
You know, and that is what happened in many ways in Vietnam. When Nixon was elected, he was elected to stop the war in Vietnam. 34,000 Americans died after Nixon was elected. So it's a real tragedy. And I remember LBJ coming on the air and making a statement, we cannot walk away. And he did make the statement, I do not want to be the first president that lost the war.
Yeah.
You know, we're winning these wars regardless of the morality of the war and the sense of the war. He didn't want to be, and yet he was, and he died in disgrace.
Yeah.
And Nixon didn't do a whole lot better.
And one of the ones you're talking about is Adam Kinzinger, who is a Republican from Illinois. I think he took Don Manzullo's old seat. But he's arguing, as you say, we can't go, otherwise these people have died in vain. The worst part about it, and you've talked about this, and I know this in your past speeches, but he said that he had served in Afghanistan. I think he was a pilot in the Air Force. He served in Afghanistan. So the idea, I think, this may be the case, that it's hard to admit that you served an immoral cause, that you served a stupid war that didn't do anything. So rather than engage yourself, rather than look inward and realize maybe I made a mistake in being in favor of this war, they want to do something that's even more immoral, which is to send, as you say, more young people to die. And they will die if the U.S. decides to stay in and decides to keep attacking. And you ask about, you know, supporting the Afghan government. 80% of Afghan territory is now controlled by the Taliban. That's a fact. Facts on the ground mean a lot more than facts coming out of think tanks in Washington, D.C.
Yeah. You know, it's a real pity that this happens, but they will work on all kind of efforts, psychological efforts. It's patriotism, too. You know, if you're backing off, you're not a patriot. I was accused of, I didn't support the troops. Well, I don't think that was the case. You know, when I was in those debates, at times, I was the only one that had been in the military,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
and the rest had not been in the military. That was 100% across the board. But, they get to the point where they think it's in their best interest, they convince themselves, but there has to be something else. Well, how can they get so confused? But there is pressure, there's political pressure, and we talked about it so often, that when you come to weaponry, weapons aren't generally built to fight wars, they're built to enrich people. You know, the weapons manufacturers make a lot of money on that.
Yeah.
And you have a lot of rich lobbyists, and they say, oh, no, we don't really want a war. We're preventing war by doing this. Yeah, but how come so many people have to die?
Yeah, exactly. Well, we want to move on to our last story, and it's something that's very important, and it's a big study that's come out of the UK, and it's been written about in the Daily Mail, it's been written about, hasn't been covered as much as it should be covered, but it's a very important and a very encouraging study. Again, a very encouraging study. A very broad research, scientists from University College London, Universities of York, Bristol, and Liverpool, they looked at all the pediatric COVID death data for the past year, COVID-19 deaths. And what they found out of 12 million children, only 25 children under 18 likely died from COVID. And of those, all but six had very serious comorbidities. And even those six, they say they don't really know if they also had comorbidities. So you're talking about literally, even if you take the comorbidities, you're talking about a 1 in 2 million chance of getting COVID and dying if you're a young person. We would look at that and say, that is fantastic news. Now the kids can go free and be left alone. But of course, that's not how it's looked at among the people who want to mask them and shoot them and do all sorts of things.
You know, there are problems with any system. The system that has the least amount of problems that are overwhelming would be the free market and not the government market, not the government control. Because this is malpractice, and people even use stronger words than that. The people that are denying or forcing treatment on children, and yet, if it's a truly malpractice, as some say worse, we go to the courts.
Yeah.
We go to the courts. If the treatment is so bad as you just described, why wouldn't this be very easy to get an injunction on this? There's no evidence that you have for these vaccines and what you're doing working, and they would, go. But they you can't go to the courts because they get immunity.
You got
the immunity. The members of Congress gave them the immunity, and it wasn't the lobbyists of the individual doctor. Even though so many doctors have flipped and aren't practicing good medicine on this at all, but they practice this medicine. But they're also the people who really cause a lot of trouble is the corporate medicine.
Yeah,
medicine now is corporatism. And I never thought it would be so close to some of these other combinations of the military-industrial complex.
Yeah.
But when you think of the drug industry, I mean, there's a ton of money that goes on that. And the way these things are forced, oh, yes, we need to do this. We have 500,000 kids at risk. We have to, give them a shot. Not one, not two, probably three they have to have. And it seems like the complications are huge, and yet they just sort of fluff them off, But that would be better. The children would be better protected, and good medical care would be better done if you had a market where people had to be responsible and liable for their actions.
Yeah. Well, let's look at a couple of these clips. This first clip is the study itself, if we can put that one up. Deaths in children and young people in England following SARS-CoV-2 infection during the first pandemic year, a national study. Now this is a draft version. It's not been fully peer reviewed, but it's there are plenty of eminent scientists that have been involved in it. Let's skip to the next one. Here are the findings, and I'm gonna just go glaze over them really quick. CYP are children and young people, 3,105 died from all causes, 61 who tested positive, 22 from acute infection, et cetera, et cetera. The 25 children and young people who died of SARS-CoV-2 equates to a mortality rate of 2 per million. I misspoke earlier, Dr. Paul. 2 per million for the 12 million people living in England. Very important. And in fact, someone tweeted over this. We could do the next one. In other words, if we can do that next clip, here's another way of saying it. Study shows children have a 99.995% COVID recovery rate, which we would find very good news. That's great to hear. Other people don't agree. Here's Dan Horowitz, who does great work on this at The Blaze. Let's click the next one, please. We have this article, we have a segment of this article on monpaulinstitute.org website for people if you want to look and follow up. But he talks about the risk level then when you talk about there is a 1 in 333 risk for a serious adverse event from the vaccine, and you have a 1 in 2 million chance of actually dying from it. And let's go to the next one, if you can. Let's assume somehow the vaccine is 100% effective in stopping the 1 in 2 million pediatric deaths. Okay. On the way to that 2 million pediatric vaccination number, over 6,000 children would suffer serious adverse effects, including life-altering disabilities and deaths. And that's even from Pfizer's untrustworthy data. And Horowitz goes on to talk about what they're finding out in Israel, which is kind of a lab for how these vaccines are doing. So he's talking about weighing risks, the risk of getting a serious adverse effect. And we know that. We see that. The data is there. And now with this good news, the risk of actually dying from it for children is very low.
And it involved in these people who have complications from the lockdown. There were people who died from suicide.
That's right. Over 100, 150 or so. So only 25 died from COVID. A couple hundred died from suicide.
Yeah.
Well done.
that's a lot of evidence, but I guess the main thing we have to do is keep pounding away for people to, and I do think there's some results on that. I think people are, wising up to it. But by the time you get settled one thing, you think things were settled pretty well with the mask.
Yeah.
But here they are because some of these kids won't take the mask. They threaten. I said, well, if you don't have your vaccine, you'll have to wear a mask,
even though
the mask might be worse than the disease.
Yeah.
Oh, it's a pity.
It's terrible. Well, I'm just going to close out with a little update on the Ron Paul Institute conference for September 4th in Washington, D.C. Dr. Paul, we had a good weekend. In fact, I've never seen it before in any of our previous conferences, but we've sold almost two-thirds of every available ticket in the first week. So they're going fast. Go to ronpaulinstitute.org. On the upper right hand, there'll be a little link, and you can go to the page, the description, if you want to get your tickets. Tomorrow, we'll reveal one of two more speakers that we have that are going to speak at the event. But we've already got great speakers, and you'll know if you see there. The war on us, Dr. Paul, as you know, this is what we've been talking about over the past year, not just COVID, but also this war on terror turning inward, the war on our civil liberties. So all these things are really topical. And we look forward to seeing as many of you as can fit in that room, and not too many more will be able to.
To me, it's always encouraging to see people want to come for a serious matter, but it's serious in a way that we also include, we expect you to have some fun and enjoyment and meet people, and that attitude has to exist. I remember one time, and I believe you were there, probably in 2012, it was in the middle of a presidential race, and I was having a barbecue here in my home area.
Yeah.
It was big, it was very big, and a lot of people turned out in thousands. So I was pleased because that was a sign that people were interested in what we were doing. But we also decided, because we had a lot of people who were very, very serious philosophically, like Lou Rockwell and others, the economists were there, and we had a large group. And I thought, well, there's some people there. They don't get to meet them too often. Why don't we just get a little room over here and have them come and give a little seminar.
Yeah.
We were in Galveston. It was on the beach. It was a beautiful day. And we have these thousands of people coming. And I thought, and then I wanted to, be cautious not to be overly optimistic. I said, why would anybody want to come here? A bunch of lectures, with this weather. Why don't they want to go to the beach? But anyway, we held the event. And we got into trouble because we had an overflow.
Overflow, yeah.
And the people went out, and I thought, that is so positive that they came, yes, they wanted a good time, but they were still interested in listening to people who spend a lot more time in trying to write and explain things. So that, to me, was interesting. So I expect that even though our next conference is not going to have thousands of people there, I think that the influence of thousands of people is important, although I do believe that it's the smaller number that dedicates themselves to understanding the issues and the philosophy that really count. And we see more and more people like that, people that started and their interests were sort of built during the campaigns, and they're doing their own thing right now. So that, to me, is very, very positive. And it seems like, oh yeah, you only got this many people, but how can you compete with the major television? How can you compete with the FBI and everybody else? Well, I argue the case that if you present it with the truth is eventually going to win out over the falsehoods and all the fake. So we are looking forward to seeing everybody eventually at our conferences. We'll continue to have these. And we thank you very much for tuning in today to the Liberty Report. Please come back soon.